Yeah, continuing, like the next shloka is Vasudevasutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum. So this speaks about like what, who is Krishna? So Vasudevasutam Devam, like that Deva. Deva, the word Deva has different meaning. Like generally it means God, but the real meaning is Devdatu. So it means somebody who is bright, somebody who is luminous, somebody who has light. So there is only one Deva who has real light, and that is like Ishvara or Brahman. That which is self-luminous is called Deva. So here Krishna is described as the son of Vasudeva, and he is Deva. He is the Deva because he is illuminator of everything. Everything in the world is illumined by Krishna, who is not like the form of Krishna, but he is Brahman. Krishna himself, in couple of places in Gita, he says openly that he is not the particular form, but he is the underlying reality of Brahman. अवजानन्ति मां मूढाः मानुषीं तनुमाश्रितं परं भावमजानन्तो मम भूतमहेश्वरम्. दिस इज इन द नाइन्थ चैप्टर वेयर कृष्णा से अवजानन्ति मां मूढाः. देर आर लाइक मूढाः इज वन ऑफ द वर्स वर्ड्स, और द वी कैन से लाइक इन इंग्लिश scolding or like shouting at a person using bad word. This is one of the most, the worst word, bad word that Krishna can use and does use in Gita. Mudaha means a person who is ignorant, foolish, who doesn't use his intellect. So avajananti mam mudaha. Mudaha avajananti mam. Mudaha or fools understand me, know me as what? Manushim tanum asritam, as having taken the human form. So those are fools who consider me as the form of Krishna. Then what is the reality? Param bhava majananto, they don't know my supreme form, the higher form or the real form, Bhuta Maheshwaram, who is the controller or the underlying reality of all beings. So people who don't understand me as not of this particular form but of a higher form. The higher form is the form of like who is the underlying reality, who is present everywhere. So Ishvara or Brahman is all pervasive like space. So there is no place or no particular area where he can be confined to. That means like he is like such an all-pervasive entity, cannot be limited to a form. If it is limited to a form, it cannot be all-pervasive. But Krishna's, one of Krishna's words is Vishnu. Vishnu means like Vishnu. The word Vishnu means Sarva Vyapanashilam. Shankara says Vyapanashilam. That means one who is all-pervasive is called as Vishnu. So the word Vishnu will become invalid for Krishna if he is limited to the form. Therefore, like Krishna is not a particular form, but he is like the Deva or the self-luminous Atman or Brahman. But still at the empirical level, Vasudeva Sutam, he is the son of Vasudeva. He is the same reality who was born in this world taking a particular form of Krishna, who is the son of Vasudeva. Kamsa Chanura Mardhanam. Mardhanam, he is the killer of Kamsa Chanura, the various asuras of Kamsa Chanura and all. So these, again, these killing or Mardhanam or the various asuras that we have in Mahabharata are not really asuras. They are people who have got some curse, and because of this curse they come down to earth and then they are liberated by Ishvara. So an asura, like when a person is killed by God or Ishvara or particular form of Ishvara, that is not real killing, but it is killing of it denotes killing of the ego. When the ego and the bondages that we have are killed, when the ego is like aham apetakam nija vibhanakam mahadidam tapo ramana vagiyam aham apetakam nija vibhanakam, when like when the thought of I or the ego thought vanishes, when ego is killed, ego is destroyed, then we will realize the self which is beyond the ego. So killing of the ego or the killing of these asuras means that such people were liberated because they realized the self. And each of these asuras were fighting against Krishna. That also indicates that they were dedicated towards Ishvara. Dedication or being focused on Ishvara, whether it is through a positive way or a negative way, it doesn't matter. What ultimately matters is how long a person is contemplating. So Nididhyasanam, whether it is due to Sneha Bhavam or Vatsalya Bhavam, any of that Bhavam, it doesn't matter. It can also be Krodha Bhavam. When you are, it's quite common that when you hate somebody or when you don't like somebody, when you're angry with somebody, you will be thinking more about them. So that is an attitude which was followed by Kamsa. So that also like is one of the way, one of the bhavam which can lead us to liberation. And these asuras, each of them have a story behind them. For Kamsa, and Jarasandha, they were like Jaya Vijaya. Since you are more into stories, you would know it anyway. So Jaya, in short, like Jaya Vijaya was where the gatekeepers of Vishnu's like in Vaikuntham. And once when the, I think, I don't remember which sage, I think Sanakadi sages, so when they came, like these Jaya Vijaya didn't know and he stopped them. And when he stopped the saints from going in, the saints cursed them. But due to compassion, when Jaya Vijaya surrendered, they said like offered two things. Either you'll have crores of good birth or three bad births, and then you'll come back again. So they choose the bad births because it's only three. That also again indicates that it doesn't matter whether you're doing good, but it matters whether you are doing good contemplating on Ishvara. So if you are doing bad contemplating on Ishvara, that is also good. Apichet sudhuracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadureva samantavyah samyak vyavasato hi saha. This is in 9th chapter. Krishna says apichet sudhuracharo. Duracharam means a person who does bad, who has bad conducts. Sudhuracharam means the highest bad conduct, but still he does that remembering me. Bhajate mam ananyabhak, but he is doing my bhajanam ananyabhak without any other thought. That means he is doing those bad actions but thinking of me alone. Sadureva samantavyah, he has to be considered as a sadhu. And as to how he would come up out of that is by, since he is contemplating on Ishvara, there will be a time when he will get rid of that bad conduct, he will get out of that bad habit and become established in Ishvara. But it means like what that Jaya Vijaya story as well indicates is that it doesn't matter whether we are doing good or bad. The action doesn't really matter, it is the attitude and it is the mental state wherein a person is always focused on Ishvara. Again, as you said, like Karma Yoga is doing actions as an offering to Ishvara, but unless like we know that we are aware of that Ishvara, we remember that Ishvara to be an all-pervasive entity and the only entity existing, Advitiya Brahman, will not serve its purpose. So all these, like if you see Kamsa's life, when he came to know about that Krishna is going to be born, he was totally focused on him. And if you have seen the Mahabharatam in TV, you would have seen that when Kamsa, like Krishna became a little bit elder, he was growing and Kamsa couldn't kill him, then Kamsa was always thinking about him. While sleeping, while dreaming, while walking, he would see Krishna. He would see Krishna everywhere. That was a state which finally led to his liberation. So Jaya Vijaya, therefore like choose the three bad lives which are focused on Ishvara, therefore they got liberated easily. So the first was Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and then the second was like Ravana and what was the Kumbhakarna, and yeah, Kumbhakarna, and then third was like Kamsa and Jarasandha. There is also another story which illustrates this point of attitude of like attitude of anger, but still that attitude in itself makes such a person always focus on Ishvara. It seems like once once to the Pandavas, the Pandavas were given a mirror in which like they said like if somebody sees in the mirror, they will see a person, they will see the face of the person who is always thinking about them. So if I see the see the mirror, I'll see the person who is always thinking about me. So like Arjuna said, okay Krishna, if you see the mirror, you will see me, Arjuna said. And then Yudhishthira said, no, I always think about you. Kunti started feeling that I think about you. And so Krishna was asked to see the mirror. When Krishna saw the mirror, any guess like as to whom he saw? I don't know whether you know the story.
No, I don't know the story.
Okay, when Krishna saw in that mirror, he saw Shakuni there.
Oh.
Because Shakuni, though, was like Shakuni was always thinking about Krishna, because he knew that Krishna is Ishvara. It's a state wherein like you know about the truth, but still you can't. You can have it two levels there. Like one is like Karna's level. You know that something is wrong, but still you are bound by it. You are habituated to it. But Shakuni's level was he knew Krishna's thing, but still he wanted to overcome it. When Duryodhana and Arjuna go to Krishna just before the war to like ask for Krishna's help. So at that time, you know the story, right? Krishna. So after coming back, like when Duryodhana came back happy that okay, he got the entire army than Krishna, than one person Krishna who would not fight as well, Kamsa, like Shakuni was the first person to scold him. He scolded him that you should have chosen Krishna, you did a big mistake. That one guy is enough for victory.
Oh.
Yeah, the Mahabharata says that Shakuni scolded Duryodhana for his mess. But still Shakuni was so clever, so he wanted to overcome that as well. But he scolded that even though Krishna is not a person who is said that he won't like take any weapon, but still he should have, like Duryodhana should have operated for Krishna. That's the difference. Yeah.
But Shakuni always has the intention of, destroying the Kauravas, right? Because
yeah.
They have insulted and all. So in that way, he should.
Pandava.
If he knows, if he wants the destruction of Kauravas and their family.
Who?
Then Shakuni.
Shakuni.
He and his brothers were insulted by Kauravas that they married.
No, but yeah, but still he was supporting Duryodhana. So he was helping Duryodhana. He liked Duryodhana a lot. So.
But there was a version saying that, there is a kind of thought saying that Shukuni was behind all this war. He made all these things happen.
I'm not aware. I'm not aware of that version, but still, like, Shakuni was. Shakuni, he knew things. He was the cause of that thing because, like, he was the person behind all actions of Duryodhana. It's the same law that okay, the person who does the fault, he is not the real culprit. The real culprit is the person who makes the person do the fault. So Shakuni was the person behind the war and all those things. He was the person who instigated like Duryodhana to do all those things, like playing that game and all those things was instigated by Shakuni. Shakuni
knew very well that Pandavas are better off than these guys. And
no, he never knew that. He knew that, but it's a mere knowledge doesn't help things, right? You may know that something you can't achieve, but still attachment and all those passions still make you do things. That's the case with like the Dhritarashtra was that way. Dhritarashtra when like when Vidura like taught him, Dhritarashtra said, "I know, I can understand everything." He was taught by Vidura, and then he was taught by like Sanatsujata, the portion where Sanatsujata teaches him. He's called Sanatsujatiyam, and that has been commented by none other than Adi Shankara. So that is a portion where entire truth is described in a beautiful way. But still after that he did all those because he was blind by passion. So he knew that he can't do, but it's a similar state with Shagwini. Knew the state because with intellectual knowledge, with intellectual proper intellect, you will know that what is right, what is not right, what is going to happen. You can judge what can happen. But still you would want to do things because you are blinded by passion. So Shakuni was like so attached to Duryodhana. Therefore he wanted to help Duryodhana in any way possible. But he was behind all the like asking Pandavas to play and then leading to a loss of kingdom and all those things.
Yeah, that's so what he was insulted and they wanted to take revenge and their bones became their pachikas and all to play and they would turn according to his wish and that's how he won it and he had designs to destroy Kauravas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not aware of that story, but at least he is the person behind all these problems because he caused. But it's also like Dhritarashtra could have put a hold. Dhritarashtra could have, like, that is what, again, does that. Though, like, one thing about these Mardanams is that, like, these people are, like, fully focused on Ishvara, that Ishvara liberates them. Another aspect with Mahabharatam is that Mahabharatam too much emphasizes on Dharma, but still, if you see Bhishma, any of those people who stood by Adharma, they had to die. Bhishma was one of the greatest person, but still, he had to die. Because he stood by Adharma.
Yeah.
And Bhishma was killed by Adharma, that is a different thing. The thing is, like, it's not about Adharma and Adharma. There is a bigger aspect there that it's more towards, like, Dharma. The word Dharma means, like, it's something which upholds. So the real upholding happens through knowledge, through Brahman. So anything that is associated with Brahman, any action that becomes good. So even bad actions, if you are doing bad actions, but still the Kamsa and all those, Darasandha and all, they were doing bad actions, but still that was associated with thought of Ishvara. And that thought of Ishvara was something like which was all pervasive. Seeing Ishvara everywhere. Seeing Kamsa saw Krishna everywhere. Whomever he saw you as Krishna. So such an attitude is what is required in life for liberation. If a person can have that attitude, still he is living in the world, doing actions, having addictions, having vasanas, but still he will become liberated because that is what is really required. So that's the aspect like which defines or makes this Mardanam or these Asuras greater people because they were focused on Ishvara than the good people. So like Krishna is the killer of the ego of Kamsa, Chanura and other people, and he gave them liberation because they had better attitude. And not only Krishna was the son of Vasudeva, he was killer of Kamsa, Chanura, and then Devaki Paramanandam. Devaki Paramanandam, he gave Paramanandam to Devaki, he gave ultimate bliss to Devaki. Because Devaki like this has a lot of other concepts or theories as well. Devaki, when Krishna was born in Karagraham, at that time, like when Krishna was born, he was born with the form of Vishnu. It was a child who had four hands bearing the various, like whatever Vishnu bears. At that time, like Devaki tells, okay, I can't see this, oh Lord, come back to the normal form. and then it becomes a normal baby. But at that time Krishna says, like, this is the third time that you are requesting me to be born as your child, but you shouldn't be asking anymore. So with that, he gave, it is the child who is born, who instructs like Devaki and Vasudeva. Thereby they realized, and then Vishnu was not born as their son. The first is like the case, I think they speak about like first is when Kapila, the great sage Kapila, was born to Sukanya, and I forgot the name of his father. But Kapila was the first avatara when their mothers like requested or prayed to God that come as my child. And the second case was Aditi's case when Vamana was born. And the third was this case. But the basic point there is that like, it's not about form. They had to really ask for Ishvara himself and knowledge, whereas they asked for Ishvara as a form, in a form. So he gave Devaki Paramanandam because he, like the compassionate Ishvara that he is, he fulfilled their desire that to be born as their child, but he didn't stop there. He said, okay, this is the third time, you shouldn't ask anymore. And by that they got knowledge, and therefore he gave Parama Anandam to Devaki, Krishnam. So such a Krishna, if he gave Parama Anandam to Devaki, then he can give Parama Anandam to anyone. It's only that we have to have the right attitude, the right way of acting, and always having knowledge that, okay, whatever is present here is only Ishvara. Everything that is seen is Ishvara alone. And one day Jagat Gurum, I prostrate such a Krishna who is the Jagat Guru, he is the Guru of the entire world. So he is Guru of the entire world, because like the tracing of Guru, the lineage of Guru is like twofold. One is from Dakshinamurti and the second is from Vishnu. So there is a shloka as well, the Guru lineage shloka, which starts with Vishnu to Brahma and Brahma to his son like Vasishtha to Narayanam Padmabhuvam Vasishtam Shaktim Che Tatputra Parasharam Vyasam Shukam Gauda Padam Mahantam Govinda Yogindra Matasi Shishyam Ata Shankaracharyam. I forgot the shloka, but it comes like Padmabhuvam and all those, and the Padmapadam, the four disciples of Shankara. So the Guru lineage is taken from either from Narayana or from Dakshinamurti. So Krishna is considered as the Jagat Guru, the Guru like who teaches the entire world, and he came down to teach a lot of people through the Krishna Avatara. Therefore, maybe that is the reason why Krishna Avatara is considered as a Purna Avatara. Though Rama, in the case of Rama, Rama teaches Lakshmana in the portion called Rama Gita, which is like purely Advaitic rather than Bhagavad Gita. It can be interpreted in many ways, many philosophies. But the Bhagavad Gita has become so popular that it is for a normal person. It is very simple. If you read Rama Gita, there are a lot of concepts there, like Advaitins use too many concepts, which is tough to understand, logical. But here it is very simple. In simple terms, Krishna explains Gita. So he is considered as the Jagat Guru. Jagat Guru means any person, if any person who thinks that he doesn't have a proper guru, he just needs to go to Bhagavad Gita and read this shloka, then he will understand that there is a guru of, the guru of Krishna is always there in one form or the other form to help people. Is it clear?
Yes,
clear. Yeah, so continuing the next shloka. Bhishma Drona Tata Jayat Drita Jala Gandhara Nilot Pala Shalyagrahavati Krupena Vahani Karnena Velakula Ashwatthama Vikarna Ghora Makara Duryodhana Vartini Sutirna Kalu Pandavairana Nadi Kaivartaka Keshavah. So this is one of the shloka which says about Krishna's role. And it's a beautiful analogy of comparing the Mahabharatam to a river or the crossing of a river. It's also symbolism of like saying that the Mahabharata bar is the same as the samsaram, bhavasagaram. It is like what we face daily in life. Mahabharatam is also like said to be the fight between Kauravas and Pandavas is something which is ongoing in the mind of a seeker. It is always going, the good and the bad. The good and the bad is again like characterized by not by external or the various smriti that okay, if you think of if you do bhajan, that is good, and if you like if you watch a movie, it is bad. That is only a general way of explaining it or defining it. The real definition is anything that is associated with the thought of Ishvara, not just Ishvara. Now, from now on, like you should always remember that whenever we use the word Ishvara or God or Brahman, that means a person who is all-pervasive, and that means a person who is non-dual, and that means a person who alone exists. That is meant, like that is the kind of that's something which you have to keep in mind that okay, whenever we speak about Ishvara or Brahman, or whenever you think about Ishvara or Brahman, you want to say something about Ishvara and Brahman, that means that automatically gives him a quality, the quality of being all pervasive and being the only entity, real entity present. So like whenever anything, any action or any thing that you do, remembering such an Ishvara, that is Dharma, that is like then you are a Pandava, you'll always have the support of Krishna. If you are Pandava, you have the support of Krishna. If you are Kaurava, you are prone to destruction. So here, like Rananadi, the Ranam or the war, the Mahabharatam war is compared to a Nadi, to a river. And like Sotirna Kalu. Kalu, Sotirna, to cross over the river of Mahabharatam war, Kaivartakah Keshavah, the person who is helping us cross over, who is holding our hand to cross over such a river of Mahabharata war is Keshava, is like Krishna or Vishnu. Keshava word is interpreted in different ways, like the simplest way is a person who has beautiful hair, and the better meaning, which is like the various commentators of Sandhya Vandanam, they explain it as Ka Isha Ava. So Ka plus Isha plus Ava becomes Keshava. So Ka means like is denotes like Brahma, denotes like Ka cum Brahma. That is also a meaning. So Ka indicates denotes Brahma. Then Isha denotes like, as we know, like Mahesha or Shiva. Ava means like protection. So the protector Vishnu. So Keshava is include is a person who is a mix of all the three, who is the lord of the Trimurti, or who is that person from whom the Trimurtis come into existence. That is in turn Brahman or Ishvara. So such a person is the person who is helping us cross over the old river of Mahabharata war. So Bhishma Drona Tata, they are like, it's like compared as like Jayadrata Jala. Jayadrata is the Jalam, and then Gandhara Neelotpala, Neela Utpalam. Utpalam means like shark. So shark is like Gandhara. Gandhara is son of Gandhari. The Gandhara is the brother of Gandhari. And then Shalyagrahavati Kripena Vahini Sukarnena Velakula. You can go through the meaning because I don't know the word meaning of each of those. But this just means that like Duryodhana is Avartani. That means like tornado is Duryodhana. So like it's we have a river where each of these, the Kauravas, each of them are different entities that obstructs us, that is stopping us from crossing the river. So unless we have Krishna, if we have to cross over the river with so many difficulties, so much obstacles, so much obstructions, then we need to take refuge in Keshava. When we take refuge in Krishna or the Ishvara, then we will cross over this river quite simply and easily. It is a very similar way of telling that, as Krishna says in the 7th chapter, Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratteya maam eva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratteya. My maya, my power of maya, which is Daivi, which is a Devi because it is my divine power. Therefore, such a maya which is gunamayam, which consists of the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, is very tough. Duratya, it is very tough to cross over, very tough to control, very tough to overcome. But mameva ye prapadyante, ye mameva prapadyante, but they, those who take refuge in me alone, they take refuge only in me, maya metam taranti, they cross over such a maya. So prapatti, like prapatti is interpreted by Ramanujacharya as like surrender, but prapatti is not merely surrender, prapatti is total or complete surrender. When like it's not the extremism of Vaishnavas, but it is an attitude wherein you are always focused, you are always surrendering to Ishvara. So when a person totally surrenders to Ishvara, then he very easily crosses over Maya. Maya is nothing but the Trigunam, or that which causes Dvaitam. So the thought that I am different from this, this is different from me, this is different from that. So Dvaita Bhavam is Maya. Once Dvaita Bhavam vanishes, that means you are out of Maya. Dvaita Bhavam vanishes when you know that everything is the Advaita Brahman or Advaitiya Brahman. And when...
One question here.
Yeah?
You're saying that it's not different from that Vaishnavite extremism, something like that, right?
Yeah.
How is it different? I mean, complete surrender to God and... How to differentiate between them?
The simple way to differentiate is that, like, you, it's not about when you surrender completely to Ishvara, that means like you don't have any concept of you and Ishvara. First thing is, there is no such difference, distinction. So ultimately or internally in your mind, there is no differentiation. Complete surrender happens when you surrender yourself. That means there is no you and Ishvara. Such a concept, like when you surrender completely, there is no differentiation or distinction. But that doesn't mean this distinction is like, that is where Advaita speaks about the two levels of Vyavaharikam and Paramarthikam. When you surrender completely, internally, you know that ultimately there is no difference between me and Ishvara. But vyavaharically you still have to do actions. You still have duality that doesn't vanish. That means vyavaharically you will be doing all actions. You will not be attributing, or you will not escape. It is an escapism when you say that, okay, everything is by Ishvara, by Ishvara's grace. You escape from actions, you escape from responsibilities, you escape from doing actions, you escape from getting the fruit of action, but by telling that everything is by Ishvara. But this aspect of complete surrender is when you do whatever you have to do. You, if you have to do something, if you have to work, you work. If you have to help people, you help. If you have to eat, you still eat. You don't say, okay, Ishvara is eating, or I offer this to Ishvara. Ishvara, everything is not attributed to Ishvara externally. You still do things, but only the attitude is different. The attitude is of offering. Is it?
Yeah, understood that it, surrendering to God should be an escapism of avoiding action.
Yeah.
Not taking responsibility.
Right. At the empirical level, you cannot avoid Dvaitam, or you cannot avoid actions. So you still have to do actions, but only that your attitude will be different. You will always be internally offering it to Ishvara. But you will still be doing things that you have to do, will not attribute anything and everything to Ishvara. You'll not be attributing anything and everything to Ishvara, but you'll be offering anything and everything to Ishvara. When you are attributing, it means that, like, so if something good happens, you say, okay, Ishvara did it. If something bad happens, Ishvara did it. So it all goes to Ishvara. But when you are offering, you still are doing it. You still take responsibility. You are, whenever something bad comes, you take it. Okay, Ishvara is giving me, I will take it, but still that taking also I offer to Ishvara. So internally you will be doing it, but externally you will not speak about it that way. This difference is very subtle, but that you can easily follow extremists. You can find out extremists, like, whenever you speak to them, they'll say everything Ishvara, everything Ishvara, everything Ishvara. But still, like, that will be a kind of escapism from different things. It's like you shouldn't, there are cases when you shouldn't say that everything is Ishvara. It's good to say that, okay. It's good to say, like, if you talk to my father, he will always speak about Amma. Whatever it is, people come to him for astrological consultation, whatever is the question, whether the horoscope is good or bad, he will say, meet Amma. But still, if they ask different things, or if they ask him doubt and other things, he will speak. And if he has to do something, he will do things. He will not tell, okay, Amma will do, Amma is doing. He will internally have that Amma is doing, but still he will do it. So that extremist case will take you to a state when, if you have to do something, you will say, oh, if it is to be done, Ishvara will do. Got the difference? That scenario will ensue. So, like, that is extremist thing, but when we, like, you shouldn't have that extremist approach. It would lead you into trouble. But the real attitude is when you to always surrender. You have complete surrender, but still empirically you do things. Just that your inner attitude completely differs. So when a person has Ishvara with him and he is totally surrendering to Ishvara, that is called prapatti. Prapatti is when in all actions you remember Ishvara and offer it to Ishvara, but still you do action. You don't get away from action. And then you always, like, remember the Ishvara as present everywhere. You see Ishvara everywhere and you offer everything to Ishvara. That is prapatti. And when prapatti is there, you overcome maya. Maya is nothing but when you see everything as Ishvara, then there is no dvaita bhavam. Though you may see dvaitam, you will know that this dvaitam is not real. What is real is the underlying reality. That alone is real. So you will be seeing everything as one. So there is no, though you see dvaitam, you see advaitam in dvaitam. And when you see everything as one, there is no dvaitam. Dvaitam will not affect you. And it is when dvaitam affects you, that is what is called as maya. So you will have overcome maya. So this war river will be crossed over. The Bhavasagaram will be crossed over. All those obstacles will be crossed over when you surrender to Ishvara. When you surrender to Ishvara, knowing that all these obstacles are nothing but Ishvara alone. So you can have a doubt that, okay, a person who is always, like, always immersed in Ishvara, will he have troubles? Like, if you take the lives of Mahatmas, all the Mahatmas have had one or the other troubles at all times. So just because you surrendered to Ishvara, just because you are spiritual, doesn't mean you will not have problems. Though it may seem that you don't have problems. You may feel that I don't have any problems, I am happy, I have a car, I have a good house, like, I have parents who are, like, fine, who are well settled, they are not forcing me to marry, I live my own life the way I want, so I am happy, I don't have any issues. That's not the case. At the empirical level, everybody will have obstacles, everybody will have issues. Like, just because a person surrenders to Ishvara, just because a person is spiritual, will not remove obstacles. But it will only make him strong enough to face the obstacles. The obstacles will cease to be obstacles because of the right attitude. When you know that, okay, it's only an illusion, everything is Ishvara, this is only an illusion, then it is as good as a dream world. You will not be affected by it. Though it will still be there, you will try to deal it, as Balakrishna says. This doesn't mean that, okay, when you become, when you are sick, you'll say, I am not the body, everything is Ishvara, so I won't take medicine. You'll not do that. But you will try to get the medicine, take the medicine, try to get rid of whatever disease you have. The good point is, if that medicine doesn't help you, still you will not be sad because you have knowledge. But just because you have knowledge doesn't mean that you will not do, you will not take the precaution or you will not take the cure. You will still go for it, but you will be with the knowledge that, okay, this is only an illusion. So as Shankara says in his Gita 5th chapter Bhashyam, he says a person with knowledge will still run after water seen in desert. Just because others are running and it is the worldly attitude to run, therefore he will also run. But the difference is in the outcome. When he doesn't get, a worldly person, when he runs after water and he doesn't get water, he will become sad. Whereas a jnani will already knows that there is no water, therefore he won't get sad after running. So this this once again, yeah. So it is just that obstacles will still be there, but you won't be affected. As a jnani will still be doing actions internally, offering it to Ishvara, knowing that only Ishvara is there. Dvaitam is an illusion. Therefore, he won't, the outcome is only the difference. The difference is not in the jnani's approach to world or his actions. That's the reason why we can't differentiate a jnani from an ajnani. It is very tough to differentiate, because a jnani might also be as good as doing all actions, living life like a ajnani. But the outcome or the bliss that is in him, or the bliss that he experiences, is a difference. He will always be blissful, whatever is the scenario. And a person who comes in contact with such a jnani can feel the bliss. But this water river, which has lot of obstacles, can be crossed over very easily, with obstacles becoming like flowers. With the thought of Ishvara, when you walk in the path which has thorns, the thorns will become flowers for you. And it will take us to cross over if we have the thought of Ishvara. If we take refuge in Ishvara, take a refuge in Krishna as Paramatma, then we will easily cross over it. So going into the next shloka. Parashirya vachas sarojam amalam gitartha gantotkatam nana akhyanaka kesaram harikata sambodhana boditam loke sajjana shatpade rahara pepiyamanam muda bhuyad bharata pankajam kalimala pradvamsina shreyase. So here it speaks about how normal people or sajjana, people who are spiritual seekers, will benefit out of Gita. So parasharya vachah means parasharya. Parashara is the father of Vyasa. So parashara means the son of Vyasa. Even as Vasudeva is Vasudeva, Vasudeva is Krishna. Krishna is also called as Vasudeva. Son of Vasudeva is Vasudeva. Similarly, son of Parashara is Parashara or Vyasa. So Vyasa, parasharya vachaha, that which is spoken by Parashara, spoken by Vyasa. Sarojam Amalam. It is like the beautiful words coming out of the mouth of Vyasa. Amalam, which is pure. Which is pure. And Gita Artha Gantot Katam. So it is like, it is the essence that we call as Gita. And Gita is by default, the meaning of the word Gita is the song. So this song has come out like, which is like different, it's like a garland of flowers which are tied together, different concepts which takes us from Ajnanam level to Jnana level. And Harikata Sambodhana Bodhitam. So like this comes as part of Mahabharatam, or where the tales of Harikata. Harikata means like where the tales of Vishnu or Hari is being spoken. So Mahabharata is is a tale. It's also considered like as a kind of Puran, where like Krishna's tales or Krishna's doings or his leelas are explained with respect to dharma. And loke sajjana shatpadehi. So in loka, the people who hear this, like sambodhana bodhitam. So harikata sambodhana bodhitam. People who are bodhitam, who become learned, or who get knowledge out of this harikata, out of this the essence of Gita, the words of Krishna. This sajjana, the various people who are spiritual seekers, who are always trying to be in the path, who are trying to learn about Sat or Brahman, those people, they drink this nectar of Gita. Pepiyamanam muda. They happily, blissfully drink this nectar of Gita. Aha aharaha. So sajjana shatpadehi aharaha. Aharaha. Ahaha means again. So aharaha means again and again. So these sajjana, various people, they drink it again and again. So bhuyad bharata pankajam kalimala pradvamsinah shreyase. So this like bhuyat, like after having like drank the nectar, so bhuyat, again and again this particular lotus which is present in Mahabharatam, this lotus which has the nectar in it, as like as any flower, we can consider it not as lotus, we can say it is a flower which has the honey in it. That honey is Gita, and this flower, like honey is not Gita, honey is the reality of Brahman or Ishvara in it, which is blissful or Anandam. And this leaf, this flower is Bhagavad Gita, which is in Mahabharatam. So for that, like that would make us like blissful and pure. And let that particular like Bhagavad Gita, which is the flower, lead us to liberation. Naha, as Shreyase, lead us to Shreyas. Shreyas means like liberation or liberated state. Yeah, continuing. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate kirim yakrapatamaham mande paramananda madhavam. So this is like a shloka which explains a lot, which can be discussed on and on, But again, it is a shloka which speaks about the power of Ishvara, or the power of bhakti, power of real devotion, or what real devotion can accomplish. We may think, okay, what can this give? What can, like, if I am into spirituality, like, what can that really give me? Can that give me the worldly pleasures? Can that make me do things which are impossible? So here it says, Mukam karoti vachalam. Mukam, a dumb person who cannot speak, he becomes vachalam. Vachalam means, like, he becomes blabbering, or a no, what do you call that? Non-stop nonsense. He'll become a person who speaks always. So a dumb person becomes such, like, talkative. Pangum langayate girim, like a lame person, he climbs a mountain. When what is there? Yat kripa tam aham vande. If there is your kripa, if there is grace of Ishvara, if there is grace of Krishna, if there is grace of Brahman or Krishna, then, like, the dumb person becomes a talkative, a lame person climbs the mountain. This means, like, this doesn't really mean that, okay, we'll be able to do impossible things. We will, if there is real devotion, if there is real faith, you will be. But what is the use of all those things? Like, a person can ask, okay, will Ishvara teach me Java? Will Ishvara teach me how to code in computers? Will Ishvara teach me how to, like, drive a car? All those things, like, are of no use such a person who is seeking bliss. The real thing that we are, everybody is seeking, is bliss. And if you get directly bliss, then you won't seek out anything else. That's the reason why a jnani is termed in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad as apta kamaha. Kamaha means desire. Apta kamaha means one whose desire has been satisfied. His desires, like, he has reached a saturation point where he doesn't have any more desires left. He doesn't have any more desires left, not because he has attained everything in the world, but just because he has attained that by which everything is attained. That he has attained, that he has realized, that after which there will be nothing else to attain. So attaining or getting bliss is the main sole purpose of life. If a person is blissful wherever he is, whatever he is doing, then he will not seek anything. He will not seek any Mahatma. He will not seek anything, either worldly or spiritual, because he has bliss. When he has bliss, he will not seek anything else. It is bliss that we seek in the world as well as in the spiritual path. So this is an optimistic way of telling that, okay, the impossible things will happen through the grace of Ishvara. But it just means that anything can happen with grace of Ishvara. That is, like, it's an optimistic approach, and, like, it's a way of, this is also called as, like, the Upanishads take this form of praising something more so that you are attracted to it. If people are told that if you come for spiritual practice, you will get only bliss, then nobody would want it, because whatever people enjoy now, they think that is bliss. Therefore, they don't want anything else. But if you say, like, if you praise something more than what it is, okay, you'll get this, impossible things will happen, then people will come. Not that impossible things will not happen, but the aim or the goal of spiritual practices is not any impossible things or vibhutis, but it is bliss. Bliss is Ishvara himself. So Ishvara himself is what is to be sought out by a spiritual seeker, not other things. But by grace of Ishvara, anything and everything is possible. So bliss itself can be achieved through Ishvara's grace. So if bliss is achieved, then it's as good as everything is achieved. And that Ishvara, whose bliss is required for all this, What is his nature? Paramanandam. Paramananda Madhavam. Madhavam means like Lakshmi's wife. That is the meaning there. But it denotes Vishnu or Krishna or Ishvara, who is Paramanandam, who is of the nature of Paramanandam. If the grace of Ishvara is there, then anything is possible. So like here, the most impossible thing in life to happen is becoming realized, because that is something which will take births, which will take many births. Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani, Punarapi Janani, Jatare Shayanam. Iha Samsare Bahudastare Kripaya Pare Pahimurare. So Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, again birth, again death. Punarapi Janani, Jatare Shayanam, again born and again entering into the womb of the mother. Iha Samsare Bahudastare. This samsaram is very tough to conquer. Kripaya pare pahi murare. If like we take refuge in Murari or Vishnu or Ishvara, then this is crossed over by his grace very easily.
I
Anyway, like Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani, Jatare Shayanam, Iha Samsare, Bahudastare, Kripaya pare pahi murare. Birth and death continues. But it's very tough. This samsaram is very tough to conquer. But if we surrender to Ishvara, then through Ishvara's grace we will conquer. So that is, it's a similar verse that is mentioned in the Mukham Karoti Vachalam. It's a similar verse that if by Ishvara's grace we'll be able to accomplish anything, that means we will be the toughest thing to accomplish is crossing over samsaram or getting realized, because it spans different births and it's one of the toughest thing to do. So, the toughest thing that becomes possible through Ishvara's grace. Again, grace is also split into three. There is Ishvara's grace, there is Guru's grace, and there is self-grace or Atma's grace, one's own grace. So, Ishvara's grace as well as Guru's grace is always there. Guru's grace is blessing of Guru. Ishvara's grace is always there like sunlight. Ishvara is a person who wants everybody to be realized. Therefore, because everybody is of the nature of Ishvara, it is as good as like Ishvara revealing himself. He would want to reveal. Therefore, Ishvara's grace is always there. Guru, a real teacher is one who would want his disciple to become himself. So Guru's grace is also always there. It is self-grace that we have to strive for. Striving for self-grace is nothing but, as Amma says, it is opening of the heart. Opening of the heart really happens when we go through a lot of spiritual sadhana, when we broaden the mind, and when we like always are in the spiritual path, when we have knowledge that everything is Ishvara and offering to Ishvara, that gives Atma's grace. When self's grace, one's own grace is there, then the heart is opened and ever-existing Ishvara's and Guru's grace is apprehended, or it is experienced, and that's when the impossible becomes possible. That is when liberation happens. So like all the sadhanas that we do, though you may have knowledge, but sadhana is essential for self-grace. Through self-grace alone, like we can open up the heart and apprehend Ishvara's grace. So, all the sadhanas in life or in one's life is for one's own grace or the self-grace. When that is there, then Ishvara's grace is also felt. When Ishvara's grace is felt, then the most impossible thing of realization or becoming ever blissful happens. Yeah, we come to the last shloka. So, यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्र रुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्खपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्र रुद्र मरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति divyaistavaihi. He whom Brahma, Rudra and Indra and all the devas, they praise through various chants, various praisings, various divyastava, various stava like Lalita Sahasranama and other stavas, like he, Paramatma or Krishna or Vishnu is one who, whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra and all everybody praise through good praising. And not only that these gods praise, but Vedaihi, Sankapada Kramopanishadaihi, Gayanti Yam Samagaha. Samagaha Gayanti. The people who follow Samaveda, they sing. And the various other Vedas, the Upanishad, speak about such reality. So it is not only that like the various gods praise Ishvara, whereas Vedas and Upanishads sing his glory, sing about him. And like, so the first level is about Devas. Devas praise, Vedas and Upanishads sing, and Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashyanti Yam Yoginaha. He whom Yoginaha Pashyanti, the various yogis see. How do these yogis see? Dhyana avastita tadgatena manasa. These yogis are always established in dhyanam. And this dhyanam happens tadgatena manasa, when their mind is focused on Ishvara. Tadgatena manasa, that mind which is flowing towards Ishvara. Flowing towards Ishvara means like with the thought of Ishvara. Such people, when the mind is flowing towards Ishvara, they become immersed, they become established, they become meditated on Ishvara, and such yogis see the Ishvara, they experience Ishvara. Here yogis is not the Patanjali yoga, but it is the yoga of Samabhavana that Krishna mentions in Gita. So such yogis see. Yasya antam na viduhu sura asura ganaha. He whose end the various asuras and devas don't see, don't know. That deva I prostrate. So I prostrate that deva, one whom the like various gods praise, two whom the Vedas and the Upanishads sing about, whom three and who is seen by yogis during their times of meditation when they are fully focused on Ishvara, and then four, whose end the various devas and asuras don't see. That deva I prostrate. So they, like whose end the devas and asuras don't see here means that like his end cannot be seen. When you can see the end of something, that means it is limited. That which you cannot see, that whose end you cannot see, that is unlimited. So space, you cannot see the end of space, because space doesn't have any beginning or end, which means that space is infinite. Ishvara is infinite or anantam, like that means like he has no beginning or end, because he is both the beginning and the end, and beyond beginning and end. Such an Ishvara is being prostrated here. Such an Ishvara who doesn't have any beginning nor end, because he is the only entity present, such Ishvara is being praised. I offer such prostrations to such an Ishvara who is praised in Gita. Before starting Gita, I offer prostrations to him, because it is only by the grace of such an Ishvara that the impossible happens. Such an impossible can happen through the learning of Gita, because learning of Gita will take me to the state of liberation. And the state of liberation is something which is very impossible, can happen only through grace of Ishvara. For grace to happen, the first thing from my side should be opening of the heart. There is no better thing, better activity of opening the heart than by offering oneself or prostrating. So I prostrate to such an Ishvara. I think with this, like this, the Dhyana Shloka is completed.